I'm your host, Jeff Dawson, for another episode of Dawson's Domain, where we cover the spectrum of life's pressing issues and events, from politics to relationships, sports to horror, alternative history to poetry, humor to baseball coaching, and everything in between. Jeff Dawson from a very sunny Dallas, Texas, which the sun has definitely been lacking for the last couple of weeks. In fact, I went to my daughter's oldest granddaughter's softball game yesterday, and it started out really warm, and everybody was dressed for summer, and the cold front came in, and it got cloudy, and it got cold as hell. That was not fun. But today, we clear skies and clear sailing. If you want to call in and join, the number is 888-627-6008 or 323-744-4831. You can find all of my works at Jeff Dawson at Amazon.com or go to LDDJEnterprises.com. You'll also find all the books plus my blog, different things that I post, and I have a Patreon account, Jeff Dawson, the Patreon, and the Twitter is Jeff Dawson 59. Well, let's start out and give a shout out to all the fine folks of Dunstan Steakhouse. I went there last night for dinner, and it was a festive event. All the gang was there: Jerry and Patty, Dylan and Sylvia, Raymond and Jennifer, Jake and Robin, and Doug. And we can't forget our fine server, Tabitha, who manages to keep everything straight and organized when most of the customers are trying to create chaos. But it was a fun night. It was the first time I'd met Patty and Jerry's granddaughter, Jennifer. Robin. I'd met her husband and she, about 6 weeks or so ago. But it was really a fun night. And if y'all live in the Dallas-Fort Worth area and are looking for family dining and a good atmosphere, you can't go wrong with Dunstan Steakhouse. They've got one location in Lover's Lane and another one on Harry Hines. Just great place to go. Book review. Grant Takes Command. If you want to know anything about the Civil War, this is a really good book on how Ulysses Grant came to be the prominent general of a flailing Northern army. I mean, at the beginning of the Civil War, there was no way the South could lose. I mean, McClellan was just a disaster. Hooker was a disaster. And you just go through the leaders. Grant was over in the West, and he had his hands full. Shiloh looked like it was going to be a disaster, but with his calm, collective approach, he didn't panic. He rallied the troops, and he turned a rout into a victory. And then he had to take Vicksburg because that controlled the Mississippi, and they tried everything. They were very afraid of the artillery that protected the Mississippi. One thing they really didn't take into account was how low the cannons could be depressed. But they were afraid if they took their troops and ferried them down to the south side to encircle the fort, that they would be shot to hell. They tried a couple of assaults from the north that were absolutely catastrophic. They tried building a canal all the way around out of the range of the southern guns. And that was a disaster. And they finally decided, let's just go down the river and see what happens, and we'll hug the shore. And that's what decided the end of Vicksburg and the siege that began. It was the first thought, and then it was the last thought. But that's the one that worked. And then with those victories, Sherman was put in charge of the Southern Front. Grant was brought back to D.C. to take over the Potomac Army that had done anything but excel, with the exception of Gettysburg. So you got the victory at Gettysburg, you got the victory at Vicksburg, but the war is very much still in the balance. And it goes to show how Lincoln and Grant met and said, go. And Grant said, I'll either win or I won't come back. But it's going to be long and it's going to be costly. But eventually, I will stretch Lee's forces to the breaking point. Because that's one thing the North did have. They did have more men than the South. And that's eventually what happened. He just kept stretching and stretching that line. He wasn't going after Richmond. He wanted to stretch Lee all the way around Richmond. So if you haven't read that book, Grant Takes Command, it's well worth your time, and you'll learn something about the Civil War, the politics behind it. Grant and Sherman's arguments with the reporters, the problems Lincoln had to deal with in his own circle, just ridiculous. The politics, you think politics are important today and vicious, they were just as important and vicious during the Civil War. Unbelievable. Okay, so that is a great book. Now we're talking about books. So we have the War on Dr. Seuss now. Now, granted, the people that have decided to unpublish six of his books are those that are running the Seuss organization. And then when you read what they have to say on why they did it, it's like, well, this is just a bunch of crap. So we talked to teachers and other specialists. Well, who are other specialists? What other specialists are you referring to? So we decided to take six of the books out of print. And those people I know on the left, I saw a meme today that was talking, trying to justify them discontinue, which it is their choice. They have the rights. They can do it. But why all of a sudden now? Well, can you say cancel culture? We want to be politically correct. And if we think there's even a minor hint that a certain race is being degraded or that this could be construed as a racial undertone, and I love that. I love when they use the term racial undertones. What the hell is an undertone? It either is or it isn't. You can take any book and set and assume what the author is writing. You can do that with some of my books and go, well, is that what he really meant? Is that where he's coming from? Well, I wrote it. So I kind of know what I wrote, but I love it when they get these panel of experts. Well, what do you think of the author and what do you think of his thoughts? Well, if the author's still alive, why don't you go ask him? And I've seen some of these interviews in the past, and the author just looks at him and goes, I don't know what you all are smoking, but it is the wrong brand. Please change today. Because that is the farthest thing from the truth. You are attempting to warp something I've written. I've got 100,000 words in this book. You're focusing on 20 and trying to determine that these 20 words define the entire story. Please give me a break. It's ridiculous. It is absolutely ridiculous. But that, sadly, is the time that we live in now where Well, if you can find one thing that you think is offensive or a racial undertone, or your perception is 180 degrees from what the author wrote, well, we don't like it, so we're just going to get rid of it. And for anyone to defend this is ludicrous. This is what the Germans did back in the 30s. Stalin did it. Mao did it. Pol Pot did it. We just don't like it. And this is why we don't like it, whether it's true or false, and a large portion of people will believe it. A very large portion. It's ridiculous. Okay. Now, on the brighter side, baseball is back. Have you heard any cases of outbreaks at spring training? I haven't. Now, what I haven't seen is what's going on with the minors. They are still being determined. And a buddy of mine, Ben Dieter, who does a Texas Ranger podcast each week, he's very knowledgeable. He gets some really good guests on there and talks Ranger baseball, which if you're a Rangers fan, it appears Andrus is gone, but either Odor's going to the minors or they're letting him go because they're going to put Solak at second. So you're going to have Kiner Falefa, who was initially thought to be playing third. Now he's moved short, which after watching him for 3 years, he'll do it. He has yet to fail in a position they have put him in. That is going to be a strong middle infield. Falefa and Solak. I like Solak. He's good. Third base is still up for debate. Looks like Trevino is going to be the starting catcher. Guzman is fighting with, I believe the man's name is Dale. I could be wrong on that, but he has not cinched up first, which we know he has struggled at the plate. A lot of guys struggle at the plate. But he got in a funk last year, like a lot of the players did. I think the Rangers had the lowest batting average in the MLB. Pretty sad. The 2020 season was just, that was a miserable failure. But it's back, and I'm seeing the same thing from my first team, the Tigers. I don't know where they're going. I need to do some more research on them, but I'm hoping they can finally pull out and start doing something. I don't know what. Winning would be a good thing, but we'll see. Because ever since Dombrowski left, it has been more than just a rebuild. It's been I look at them, I look at the Rangers, and I go, "What the hell are you guys doing? What is your plan? Do you have a plan? Have you thought about a plan? Or are you just fielding a team?" Some days I really wonder, but every year's a new year, and hopefully we are going to have a full year with no interruptions and get to enjoy this sport. Now, as I said, on the minor leagues, they're to be determined, but the proposition that Manfred put together in 2019 has gone into effect. And there was a lot of outrage and upheaval over this. They're eliminating about 30% of the minor league teams across the country. And they're going to consolidate with teams that were drawing well and try and boost them. They're going to have the home teams give more money to their farm teams. MLB is going to throw in some more money to upgrade fields, which, I mean, when you went back through it, I forgot the actual number, but if you saw how many minor league teams there were across the United States, it really did boggle your mind. I mean, each home team had like four four minor league teams that fed into the organization. That's a whole bunch of ball fields. And how many times did you hear that if they drew 800, 1,000, 1,200, it was a struggle? I mean, the Frisco Rough Riders, they have struggled to bring fans in. I think one of the biggest problems with the Rough Riders is the lighting. I don't know who designed the lighting at that stadium, but if anybody out there is affiliated with that organization, y'all really need to look at it. It's horrible. It's dark. It's a dark stadium. The lights are on and it's dark. It's not an exciting environment to watch a game. I've been up there. I've seen a few. It's just, you don't really get the feeling that the lights are on and it's time to shine. It's like, well, is this just the warm-up before the game actually starts? But really, nobody wants to go to a poorly lit stadium, much less play in one. So, hey, let's try something new. Now, because it's not what you would call a residential area. So let's think about upping the wattage on those bulbs so it instills the fans with a sense of excitement that we're here to see it. You know, as a child, youngster growing up in Tulsa, I went to the AA games at Driller Stadium. I believe that was better lit than the Frisco Stadium, and that was before they had to tear it down because termites, it was an old wood stadium, the termites just chewed it apart, and nobody knew it until the Rangers and the Astros were playing an exhibition game, and I believe this was 77 or 78. The storm came in, fans ran to the top in about a 20 by 10 section, and the upper deck collapsed. Luckily, nobody was seriously hurt. The game was suspended for about 45 minutes because a lot of the players came out to assist the fans. It was a mess. Well, then they realized how rotten the stadium was and it had to go down. But it had better lighting than what you see in Frisco. So you want to excite fans? You really want to be in a great baseball environment? Think about redesigning the lighting out there because it's really pathetic. It really is. Okay, but it's back. Baseball is back. And so far, it's on track. And that is exciting. That's my sport. I love it. It's the only thing that I could really excel at. I wasn't bad at football, basketball. Well, you know, white men can't jump, and I was the epitome of that saying. People would say jump. If I got 3 inches off the ground, that's about as high as it's going to go. Okay. Oh, what is new in the news? Well, there's a whole lot in the news about the coronavirus and about the battle between the White House and Texas and Mississippi. Well, a year ago, I wrote a little ditty about this, and I thought it would be very appropriate before I get into what the president, the new term, the president of the United States, boy, that puts a bad taste in my mouth, had to say about these states that are opening up. As of today, March 13th, planet Earth is closed. This action is necessary to accommodate the rampant stupidity flying across the planet today. It has also been reported by unnamed sources that the Martians and Mercuryites have diverted their invasion forces. Why? It was once thought by their leaders they would find intelligent life on Earth. Well, somewhere, it's not in the United States right now. For eons, they watched our planet evolve. They marveled at the technological advances those puny humans made. In one century, they made great strides in medicine, weapons, philosophy, empathy, and to a degree, enlightenment. They were wiping out crippling diseases, extending life expectancies, and reducing birth rate mortalities. At one point, they feared the planet was in trouble in 1918. A disease unknown to the foreigners swept across the planet, decimating a third of its population. That's a fact. 500 million people were infected by the Spanish flu of a population of 1.5 billion, and 60 million died. But they rebounded and forged forward. Still, man continued to battle back. They noticed other diseases that were rampant in the human race. After intercepting messages, they learned of smallpox, cholera, tuberculosis, whooping cough, typhus, polio, measles, mumps, and something called Ebola. By the Earth calendar, another cataclysmic event occurred. They called it World War II. While both of the invading armies were familiar with war, what they witnessed was frightening. With the exception of a few countries, the Earth was on fire. In the end, they wept for the 60 million lives the conflict extinguished. But once again, those people on the paradise planet prevailed and came back stronger, smarter, and more resilient than ever. But then the tide began turning in a way no one could foresee. The invention of what the Earthlings called the iPhone made connectivity to all humans possible overnight. Information could be sent around the globe in a matter of seconds. Truly, it appeared the time was ripe to move in and glean the fruits of this advanced society's advances. Or was it? There was one invention they took for granted: television. On the surface, they admired the technology and found it amusing at times. They were amazed at how a race so advanced could be so enthralled with a box displaying images. A once proud planet that thrived on hard work, resiliency, and physical exertion was becoming complacent, lethargic, and lazy. Still, if they got there in time, the prize was worth taking. And then the unimaginable happened. They watched through their imaging devices, a panic unseen in their centuries of studying the planet. A mass panic was gripping the planet. Was it a coming war? Was a natural catastrophe occurring? Were the bodies of water rising? Were storms ravaging the surface? No, it wasn't any of those. Then what could it be? The question was answered when they decided to examine those boxes that were in every household across the world. For those that didn't have one, they were found congregating at other gathering places, glued to every word the other humans were trying to say. Why? When they found the answer they were searching for, they were shocked. This race of people that had endured, suffered, risen again, and flourished were being convinced that the world as they knew it was coming to an end. Something called coronavirus was sweeping the planet, and it was the people in the boxes who were spreading the word. But it wasn't only the words they spoke, it was the way they spoke. They found themselves mesmerized by the bright spotlights, the smartly dressed hosts, and the headlines that kept changing. For several days, they too became transfixed with the box and those who kept talking to them. When the commanders of the invasion fleets were not receiving daily reports, they decided it was time to investigate what was going on. That seems like a logical conclusion. Why aren't we getting any daily reports? Why aren't people responding to our requests? Well, let's look into this. They were shocked. None of the normal duties or maintenance operations were being performed. Drills had been canceled. Debris littered the once pristine floor. When they identified the problem and held a high-level conference, they came to the same conclusion. In order for them to achieve their goals, they would have to cut the transmission and attempt to regain control and discipline. They knew there could be backlash, but it was worth the chance. Without asking for consent, the transmission was cut. Yeah, think about that. The transmission was cut. For us, just turn the damn thing off. The initial reaction was as expected. A few cases of mutiny were logged. Many of the soldiers displayed acts of depression and withdrew from the others. Sick bays were crowded with the lethargic, lazy, mindless individuals. They had lost the ability to think for themselves and function. In a week, there were signs of improvement. The doctors verified the leaders' fears. It was the box that had caused the epidemic. Turning off the box was the best medicine. With this newfound information, both forces convened a military conference to discuss future plans. It was agreed at this time all plans of conquest were put on hold until the people of the planet were able to regain their senses and become the resilient race they had studied and admired for centuries. During the conference, one of the leaders, who was considered an expert on the human race, brought up a saying he had gleaned from his intense studies that came from the 80s, Earth time. It was, garbage in, garbage out. How many of us remember that? With the dawn of the computer age, if you put garbage in, you get garbage out. You think that doesn't apply today to the media that thinks they are the all-knowing and all-powerful and all-knowledgeable and intelligent, and they couldn't pour crap out of their boot with written instructions, and you're standing there showing them visually how to do it? Yeah, that's about right. At the time, the saying baffled them. No longer, after studying the mysterious box and reading the doctor's reports, he now understood the words and their effect on the human race. How would it affect his people? It was decided the risk wasn't worth it. See, they weren't coming to conquer the planet, in a sense. They were coming to consume those they had been studying, and one must be careful what they consume, shouldn't they? In more ways than one. So how does that fit in with what I wrote a year ago with today? Well, Hillary called us deplorables. We were the scum of the earth. We were the bottom feeders. I guess Joe felt he needed to trump that. And remember his speech about unifying all Americans? Even those that didn't vote for me, well, he really did a good job when he called us all Neanderthals, because Texas and Mississippi are opening up their states. Neanderthals, huh? And then here came, I'm going to get to Abbott in a minute, because I'm not letting this guy off the hook so easy. So we're all Neanderthals now. Why? Because we won't bow down to what the federal government says. Remember, this was a states issue a year ago, and the states were raising holy hell about, you can't do this, you can't. You're telling the feds, you can't do this, you can't do that. Well, it's in their constitution. It's in the United States Constitution. States have sovereign rights. They are in charge of themselves. Joe doesn't like that. Why? So Abbott is doing the right thing. But Governor Abbott, I'm still not letting you off the hook with ERCOT. And for those of you that are listening and want to see a lot of my videos, go to Director 59 on YouTube, and I rip Abbott and ERCOT and the Texas legislature a new one, because they deserve it. They're the ones that caused this massive disaster 2 weeks ago. It wasn't the federal government. It was Austin and ERCOT. They're all responsible. So yeah, Greg, I'll give you points for opening up the state next Wednesday, but you ain't getting a damn point for this energy disaster that gripped us for 4 days. Anybody, and these people who are still having to boil water, well, this is a direct result of the grid collapsing. You want to shake up ERCOT? Then you put people on there that can turn a wrench and know how to fix things and get things done, not a bunch of lawyers and regulators and professors of economics. Yeah, that's the top three people at ERCOT. Oh, well, Magnus got fired. I don't give a damn. What about the other 15 people that are on that board? None of them turned a wrench. It's all politics. It's all bullshit politics, too. But what I couldn't find out is who appoints these people to the ERCOT board. I'm still looking for that, because whoever does the appointees, they all need to be fired, and all those people responsible should be paying I don't care if it wipes out their savings. That's not my problem. If they've got to sell all of their land and their cash in their investments to pay for this fiasco that they caused, they're responsible, not the insurance companies that homeowners are paying their premiums to. It's the morons that were involved in charge that caused this. You are fiscally responsible. Ooh, use that term fiscally with a politician and watch them run like a whipped dog. So, Abbott, thumbs up for opening up the state. You make sure Judge Jenkins in Dallas County gets that memorandum because I don't want to hear any crap out of his GSA either. And if you want to know what GSA stands for, you have to go on my blog. I'm going to try and keep it clean today. It's difficult, but I'm going to try. So we're all Neanderthals with the open states, but we aren't the only ones that are open. There's 14 others. I'm sorry that New York and Wisconsin and Michigan and California and Oregon and Washington. Oh, yeah, they're still having riots in Portland. Thought those were supposed to end after the Democrats got in power. Yeah, that ain't happening. But you don't see it on the news. They don't want to cover that. No, we can't do that. Why? Well, it makes our party look bad. So Joe calls us Neanderthals and that we're going to go backwards. And then I've seen all the memes and I've listened to all these people losing their mind over everything's going to explode. And Texas is going to lead the nation in cases again. Just for historical perspective, does anybody really know what the top four worst weeks were of new cases of this virus? Anybody? Anybody got one idea? Well, I do because I've been tracking this since April. Because watching the news, I was just getting BS from whatever station I turned on. None of them had a clue. Well, here's where we're at. The top week. Can I read my handwriting? Yes. 1/10/2021. 1.7 million new cases. That's 1/10/2021. Week two, 12/20/2020, 1.6 million. Week three, 1/17/2021, 1.57 million. And week four, 12/13/2020, 1.53 million new cases. And you know when it really started taking off? November 8th of 2020 is when cases started rapidly spiking. Now, wait a minute. That doesn't make sense, does it? Remember this time last year? We were in lockdown in Texas for 6 weeks. But it just kept going and going and going. And then county by county, they did their own thing. Well, if in up north, the Northeast and the West Coast states, they've been in lockdown since the beginning. Then why the hell were these 4 weeks the biggest ones? You Neanderthal Joe. And why doesn't the press bring this up? Yes, the cases have been going down. I've been following that, except for last week, we had a 2,000 new case increase from the prior week. That's why I track this. This is why I do my own research because I don't believe a damn thing any of these people tell me. It's all about their show and the millions of dollars they get paid, blah, blah, blah. But if we're Neanderthals, Joe, how come all these lockdowns didn't work? Why is at the end of 2020 and the beginning of 21 the biggest reported new cases? And I don't want to hear about the dark winter. I mean, if I want the dark winter, hell, I'll just read the Game of Thrones series, which I read two of those, and that was enough. I couldn't go on. It was just a big medieval soap opera that I just couldn't finish. But remember, they all said winter's coming. How many of those memes do you remember saying? Bunch of crap. But who's a Neanderthal, Joe? Lockdowns didn't work. The numbers show it. These viruses run historically. Look at the Spanish influenza, year and a half, 2 years, and then they just kind of die out. And the WHO doesn't know why, even though we're back in them and going to give them another $500 million a year. It's just ridiculous. Oh, hell, it's just money. Let it go. Who cares? Who cares? We Americans are going to care one of these days when the check just to pay the interest bounces and our economy goes, just like it did in 29. This is not going to be pretty. Okay. Now I got another bone to pick with the media. Anybody out there read H.R. 1 or H.R. 127 or H.R. 51? H.R. 1 is the For American People Act. This is all about voting, revamping. What it's about is the federal government taking over federal elections. That's what it's about. States aren't going to have a say anymore how they do this. I've read the bill. I've done pieces on the bill. It's a horrible bill. H.R. 127 is an amendment to Section 18, Chapter 44, concerning your guns. That thing passes. If you're a gun owner, Democratic or Republican, it doesn't matter. You're screwed if this passes. And the reason is that all you hear about are how the rich are the privileged and the rich need to be taxed. Well, the way 127 is worded, only the rich will be able to afford guns because the when you apply for your license, you have to go through a psychological analysis, but it doesn't end there. Three other people will be interviewed to determine if you are mentally stable to handle a weapon. Who pays for that? Now remember, the psychologist is approved by the state. What do you think their hourly rate's going to be? Think about when you have to do an in-service child. Oh, what does the CPS call it? A family study to determine if the parents are able to raise children. Well, the people being investigated, they have to pay for that, and that's $1,500. For that in-service study. Because the plaintiff said, well, we don't think they're capable. The plaintiffs aren't paying for it, the defendants are. So you're going to have to pay as a gun owner or potential gun owner for this interview and the other three interviews. What do you think that hourly rate's going to be? $250, $350? 450. How many hours does the interview take for each person? And if you don't have the money, guess what? You don't get to keep your guns, including your antique guns. Well, my problem with the media, especially Fox in this case, is why aren't they hammering on this? I don't give two. I said I'd try and keep it clean. I can't on this one. I don't give two shits about what's going on with Cuomo. That's New York's problem. Let the state of New York take him down. But instead of talking about these bills, and I'll get to H.R. 51 in a minute. No, Fox spends all their time talking about Cuomo. I don't care. He's scum. Fine. He's not the governor of Texas. He's the governor of New York. Let the citizens of New York hold his feet to the fire and make him accountable. I understand there was this love fest between him and his brother at CNN. I don't care. That means nothing to me. You want to report about Cuomo? Fine. His handling of the virus, as we're seeing, was horrible. What he did to the nursing homes is horrible. Now he's got three sexual misconduct claims against him. Fine. Not every host on Fox needs to have that as their lead hour story. Why aren't we talking about these bills? Because in H.R. 1, D.C. statehood is in there. H.R. 51 is the backstop, in case it fails, of D.C. becoming a state. So why are the Democrats putting two bills out there for D.C. to become a state? I ask you the question. Do you have an answer? Oh. So why aren't they hammering their viewers and informing them? I have a difficult time watching any news station for more than 5 minutes. I try not to watch any of it over the weekend because we all need a break. It goes back to garbage in and garbage out. And we're getting a whole lot of that. We don't need any more of that. But why aren't they? These are important issues that will affect every American. Democrats, if you're listening and you've got a weapon, H.R. 127 is coming after you too. So put aside your politics. It's coming. They're coming after your guns. Remember Joe said we're not? Well, he lied. You won't see that on MSNBC, NPR, CNN, ABC, CBS, NBC. You won't see that on those networks. It's a cover-up. It's a major cover-up. And if you people on the left want to keep your guns and go hunting, you better get with your representatives and senators and say, hell no. There is nothing good about that bill, because if you read it, and it's not that long, believe it or not, it's not that long. It's like 48 pages because it's an amendment to existing law. You will see how many other rights, if this passes, that they will be able to strip all of us of. And it's not good by any stretch of the imagination. It's horrible. So, yeah, I'm pretty pissed off at what, if you want to call it the conservative media, call it the conservative media. They ain't doing their damn job. They need to have these three bills front and center and knocking the hell out of it. You know, they made a feeble attempt at this CARES package that just passed, 50-49. Did anybody read that? Did anybody look at the highlights of it? Or did you just rely on the media to tell you what's going on? If you relied on the media, well, then you're woefully misinformed. I went through it. And remember when Joe said, well, I don't know what could be taken out of it. Well, because you didn't read it, I'm going to be nice. I came up with over $480 billion that could have been cut out of it. The biggest winner in this whole thing is the $350 billion that's going to states. For what? What do the states need the money for? It's the people. This is what we've been told all along. The people need the money. The people are suffering. The small business owners are suffering. But we're going to give a $350 billion bailout to states that couldn't budget, couldn't run a budget if they had to. And when you go through the bill, it really doesn't say how much each state's getting. I believe the lion's share is going to go to New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, Massachusetts, Washington, Oregon, and California. Michigan probably be in there too. Texas, Oklahoma, Nebraska, Kansas, Arkansas, Louisiana, Mississippi, Alabama, Florida, Montana, Idaho, y'all can just stand in line. Kentucky, Tennessee, South Carolina. Yeah. We'll think about it. Ponzi scheme. It's just a damn Ponzi scheme. And there is so much crime. I mean, postal workers for time off, that's in the bill. Yes, the renter's mortgage portion, that's a good part. So people don't get thrown out of their units or their homes because they couldn't work or lost their job because of this ridiculous shutdown we were forced to endure, of which now they're saying they really don't. It didn't work. I just gave you the numbers. Ludicrous. Absolutely ludicrous. But Schumer, this is his quote, "It is broader, deeper, and more comprehensive in helping working families and lifting people out of poverty than anything Congress has seen or accomplished in a very long time." Out of poverty? We've been hearing that since the 60s, haven't we? You mark those words and see what the poverty rate is today on 3/6/2020 to 3/6/2022, and let's see just how much it helps the impoverished. And I'll tell you right now, it's not. Because based on his statement, then this homeless problem we're seeing in Dallas and San Francisco and LA and any other city, Seattle, hell, they don't even care up in Seattle anymore. Those bunch of inbreds. I'm going to be nice. I'm going to be nice. Show me the city with a homeless problem. Let's see where they are a year from today. Because Chucky Boy says it was going to pull people out of poverty. What a crock. And here's a real problem with all this. Ever since this nuclear option came up that Harry Reid was so big on, and then the Republicans didn't do a damn thing about it when they had power, because they're like, well, they did it, so we can do it. So then, well, if we, blah, blah, blah. What a bunch of crap. Just because they did it doesn't mean it's the right damn thing, and it isn't. There is a reason that it was set up where two-thirds have to agree. You know why it was set up like that? Because we're a republic. We are not a democracy. We are a republic. Majority, that was the founding fathers did not set them up for majority rule. They set us up for a consensus rule. And to have a consensus, you're going to have to get a whole lot of people from the other side to agree. Look at Lincoln's battle with the 13th Amendment. And the movie Lincoln is really brilliant in showing how much people had to work together. How do you, if you have the majority in the House and the Senate, your party does, what compromise? What give and take do you have to do? Zero. You don't have to work with anybody. Oh, we got the majority, so we're just going to pass it. That's not the way this country was set up. It was set up so that representatives, would have to work together. What a novel idea. Work together. That's not what they want to do anymore. Republican, Democrat, they don't want to work together. All they care about is that we're in power and it's our show now and we're going to show you how to do it right. Nobody wins. Nobody wins. Do you hear me? Nobody wins. So let's say the Republicans flip the House in 2 years and flip the Senate. What are they going to do? Spend half of their time going back and getting rid of all the damage that Biden's administration is going to do, just like Biden's trying to get rid of everything that Trump did, and Trump, to a degree, got rid of things Obama did. And then, and Obama blamed Bush for everything that he inherited. I mean, it's just this cycle that's been going on since 92 has got to stop. We didn't see it with Reagan, but we didn't see it with Senior, but Bill Clinton is where the PC movement started. First time we ever heard of political correctness. And then it's just gotten worse and worse and worse. You know, a lot of people say that what's going on is immoral. Okay, well, if you want a history lesson, let's go back to the empire that ruled for over 1,000 years. And when they gave up on morals and ethics, it collapsed from the inside out. And that was Rome. How could Rome fall? Because the leaders became decadent, ignored the people, shunned the military, and accumulated all the wealth. Isn't that kind of what the czars did in Russia for centuries until 1917, and the soldiers on the front lines who were fighting the Germans just said, "The hell with this," and went home. Germans didn't defeat them. Russians just went home and took the czars down. Is this really where we want the United States to go? Sadly, I see it happening. It's not good. Okay, last thing I want to talk about is the minimum wage debate. And I wrote a piece on that, and I put it on my blog, and it's on my Facebook page, Jeff Dawson. $15 an hour. Well, I'm just going to give you some real quick notes here, because this one person I know, he is a hard liberal and is trying to explain how $15 an hour is being so helpful in San Francisco. The average one bedroom apartment in San Francisco is $2,641. In Dallas, Texas, it's $1,256. Even at $15 an hour, you don't have enough money if you only get 40 hours a week to even think about getting an apartment there. So I guess you're going to be living in your car. In Dallas, you have a fighting chance until you go through all your bills and realize, okay, I've got $180 left over. Uh-oh, I forgot my commute time. So there goes that money. So you got nothing for health insurance if your company doesn't have it and you need it yourself. You got no money for health insurance, childcare, investments, entertainment, a trip just to get away from it. You don't have any money. But at least you got a place to live and you got a car in San Francisco. You don't even have that. Yeah, I guess. On the West Coast and probably in New York City too, $30 an hour is what it's going to take. But you know, if you, there's nothing magical about this. If you listen to the media, it's the cure-all to end-all. No, it's not. It's not even close. Not even close. Because the way they're portraying it, well, let's just be happy with $15 an hour. So you don't want to improve yourself? You don't want to watch Mike Rowe's Dirty Jobs and improve yourself? You just want to say, well, I'll just be happy with $15 an hour. When I was making $205 an hour in 1976, I was not happy with that. Then I got a job in construction where I paid $8 an hour, which was a hell of a lot better in 1978. But then I got overtime. I'd get 10, 20, 30 hours of overtime a week. That was damn good money in 1978. You could save up money. But I wanted more than that. And I've advanced in construction through the years because I wanted to better myself. You listen to this debate on the minimum wage. Yeah, you don't need to better yourself. Be happy with what you've got. Happy hell. No, that's not what America was founded on. You come over, how many people came over here with nothing, including those that immigrated to the United States after World War II, and they had to be sponsored to get over here? Thousands of Jews came over to this country with nothing and have done great things. How many people? I mean, history is full of entrepreneurs that had nothing, expected nothing, and earned everything. Some of them earned it, they lost it. Look at the men that signed the Declaration of Independence. A slew of them wound up penniless, bankrupt, because they put it all on the line. That's what Americans do. We put it all on the line. We take a risk. That's what has made this country so great. It is for risk takers, not lazy. Damn it, where is that? What did I call everybody? Shit. Complacent, lethargic, and lazy. That is not America. We strive to do great things. And you don't do it by waiting for somebody to give you something. You earn it. You will fail. It happens. You will learn from your failures and move forward. Now, if you want to sit in your beer and cry, that's also a choice. You can make $15 an hour and bitch and moan and complain and carry on that life wasn't fair and this, that, and the other. I have more than enough experience in life not being fair. Get a copy of my book, Why Did Everything Happen? And I'll show you how unfair it can be. But when people tell me it's not fair, I look at them and go, well, the fair only comes to Texas once a year, and that's for 3 weeks in October. That's it. There's your fair. No one said it'd be easy. So you raise the minimum wage to $15 an hour. I'm in construction. Are you going to do that to the Davis-Bacon Act too and make the minimum for an unskilled labor $15 an hour? Remember, unskilled labor, $15 an hour. Do you know what that's going to do to the price of construction projects across the United States? If cities have already passed bonds, they won't be able to do all the jobs because the labor costs are going to go up incrementally, say 15%. And that doesn't include the additional premium the employer will have to pay for his insurance policy and his worker comp. So those costs go up. Now we can't do as many jobs. We've got to start, have another bond project and take 20 to 25% of the jobs that this one, we thought we had the money for. Now we've got to move it over here in this next project, which those roads aren't going to be, or projects aren't going to be addressed for the next 7 to 8 years, because that's usually how long it takes for these things to actually get into the works and be done. Your highway jobs, yeah, good luck with that. And remember, that's one thing that didn't get passed during Trump's administration. There was no infrastructure bill. And that was back in, what was that, 19? When Pelosi basically threw, when Trump threw Pelosi out of his office, because that's what they were talking about. And Pelosi had a little fit and ran off. Everything will go up. And inflation won't be far behind it. And a lot of menial jobs, don't think employers won't try and figure out how to replace them with current technology. I mean, there's plenty of people on the left that are all for this. I'm not an economics graduate, but I can add. And I've seen what inflation does on construction projects. Rising fuel prices. Gotta love this. Because if you don't see them going down, well, guess what? We've got to figure that additional fuel in our bid. That's going to drive up the price of projects. Does a raise, does the minimum rate, wage need to be raised? Well, yes, but it's never been doubled. The largest increase was in the last one where it went up 75 cents. Minimum wage, when it was passed in 1938, it was 25 cents an hour. It was never intended to be this wage where you could go out and buy a house on the Riviera or live in the lap of luxury. It was to survive, to where you could eat, get some clothes. And back then, most people couldn't buy them. They had to make them. There was no thing as store-bought for the majority of Americans. And you had a roof. It might leak. Air might blow through the windows, but at least you had a roof over your head. My grandfather was a recipient of this when he worked for the WPA. He and his wife, Lucille, they didn't have this great life, but they kept moving forward and improving themselves to the point where granddad had like three restaurants, small restaurants in the state of Oklahoma. He just couldn't stick with anything, and that's another story. But it's a starting wage to teach people responsibility. Well, those who have made it, especially on the left, they have all these opinions about it. Well, then they should take all of their wealth and start going down into those cities and cleaning them up and giving the homeless $500, $600 a week so that they can support themselves since they're so big on it. Well, dig into your wallet. I don't want to hear about you giving to charities because I know exactly what charities wind up doing. All the people that are on the board are the ones that make the money. Where it's supposed to go, it doesn't happen. Unless you're TJ Watt and you raise $20 million for those that suffered during Hurricane Harvey. Every penny he raised went to those people. But he is the anomaly. He is the oddity. But it's so easy for those on the left to just sit back and say, well, I have all these lofty ideas. And this is what I think is good for those people. Well, why don't you go down there and meet with those people and find out and start supporting them and start cleaning up your own damn cities? Or is that just too difficult to do? It's so easy to keep posting Facebook memes and thoughts of happiness in goodwill. Well, get off your goodwill and start doing something about it. It just infuriates me. So the minimum wage is exactly that. It's a minimum wage. If that means that you might have to roommate with people, well, then that's what we did. That's what we did back in the 70s and the 80s. That's what we were taught. Be responsible. Figure out a way to make it happen. In San Francisco, in a one bedroom, y'all look like sardines. You need at least four people just to get the damn one bedroom apartment. Maybe they need to start looking at why the real estate prices are so high. See how much those developers are making. Oh, that's right, but the developers are the ones making the risk. So who's setting the price of the land and who's getting all the money from that land? Oh, that's right. The city's taxing the hell out of them. You raise that minimum wage, you think prices aren't going to go up to match it? Sure, they will. It's called inflation. Because if your property managers think that you're making more money, well, let's bump that rent up another $200 a month. See what our occupancy turns into. Let's see if we stay at that 85, 90% mark we want to be at. If it dips down below 85, maybe down to 80%, yeah, okay, we'll run a special. We'll suck them in with a special for 3 months. And then we're going to put that price right back where it was. I believe the minimum wage should be $8 an hour. That would be the second time it went up 75 cents, not 15. Not by a long shot. And if you've got any thoughts on that, like I said, go to my site, lddjenterprises.com. And I have an email up there that you can send comments to. But things aren't looking rosy right now. Not at all. But we can always hope for the best. And that things would get back on track, whatever track that might be. Yeah, I'm not a fan of Joe, and I'm definitely not a fan of these policies that they want to push through because the United States that I grew up with is not good. I don't have a problem if you're a Republican or a Democrat. I'll read these bills as time allows, and I can just to make sure that I'm informed and knowledgeable. Because as I said, I don't rely on the media to do it, but when I see something that's bad and just doesn't make sense, you're damn right, I'm going to call it out. And right now, HR 1, 127, 51. I just downloaded the Equality Act. Man, our values as a country are under attack. And the only way to stop it is you've got to get with your representatives and your senators and say no. And that goes for you on the left, too. Don't take what they're telling you at face value. Do your own research. Like I said, HR 127, for you Dems out there, they're coming for your stuff too. And if you want to keep your guns, including your antique guns and all your collections, you better convince those people to vote no. Otherwise, you can kiss your guns goodbye. Now, let's see, where are I believe that wraps up this episode. I've enjoyed this time with you, and I will see you again in 2 weeks. And if you, like I said, my books are on Amazon.com, Jeff Dawson. I write something for everybody. And I hope you'll take the time and pick up a book, post a review. And until then, I will talk to you later. Have a great rest of the weekend and a coming up week. I hope you enjoyed our time together. I know I did. Without you wonderful listeners, this show would not be possible. If you want to know more about me and how my brain works, that's a scary thought, check out my books at Jeff Dawson on Amazon.com, websites LDDJ Enterprises and Jeff Dawson Author.site for upcoming releases and teaser excerpts from past and present publications. You can also contact me at Facebook, LDDJ Enterprises Publishing, or email LDDJEnterprises@gmail.com or on Twitter at JeffDawson59. Have a great week and look forward to seeing you on the next episode of Dawson's Domain.